Before we get into the episode, we have a special announcement. We'll be recording two live interviews at next week's Pictoplasma conference in Berlin. Come join us in person on Sunday, May 5th from 2 p.m. for one interview with illustrator Martina Paukova and one with 3D animation studio Yonk. Entry is free for everyone, not just ticket holders. So come by and let's hang out. Now let's get into the episode.
It's not as hard as it seems. Like, I know it's not easy, and I know, like, I've done a lot of work to make it look kind of easy, but I just want to share with people the process because it doesn't have to be crazy or intimidating. Like, it can just be messy and stupid looking until it doesn't look stupid or continues to look stupid, you know, whatever.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of Paid to Draw. I'm one of your hosts. My name is David Leutert, but you can call me Dave. I am an illustrator specializing in hand lettering, and I'm based here in Berlin, Germany. We're still on season 3. This, I believe, is episode number 21. And with me here, as always, is my delightful co-host, Vicky, whose birthday was just yesterday, actually. Happy belated birthday.
Yeah, thank you. I love it. I want everybody to know that it was my birthday, even though this episode comes out like months later.
Hi, Vicky.
Cool. Yeah, that was my voice. I'm Vicky, also known as Victoria Chihon. I'm also an illustrator. I'm no longer in Berlin. I'm an hour away from Berlin. You don't need to know exactly where. And today I'd like to introduce you to our wonderful guest, Simone Wilder.
Yay.
Hello.
Yay. Hi, Simone.
Hello.
Hey.
Simone Wilder is a full-time senior art director and lettering artist based in Nashville, Tennessee. And since 2013, she has collaborated with clients like HBO Max, Nickelodeon, Netflix, Harvard University Press, Random House, and the Elizabeth Warren Campaign, creating custom lettering artwork for established brands, books, apparel, and much more. She is fiercely passionate about producing meaningful and long-lasting work. In her spare time, she enjoys pretending she's super outdoorsy and laughing with friends around bonfires. She doesn't enjoy running, but does it a lot anyways. And I have to ask right away, why? Why do you do it?
I guess I'm a masochist. I don't know. I do it for my dumb mental health. Oh, that's why that's I do reason. It.
So you don't even enjoy it after? Like the, you know, like when you swim in a cold lake and then you feel it's awful, but after you're like, I'm invincible or something?
I think I do enjoy the after, and I still do it because like once, maybe twice a year, you get that runner's high where you just can like, you feel like you could run for 20 miles and that's always a nice feeling, but pretty rare.
Yeah, I never had that. I was running for years, but I don't know, maybe just running from my problems. I don't like it at all.
Yeah, it's not fun in the moment, I must say.
Yeah, it's a bit cold, huh?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about stuff you do enjoy, and I want to know everything about how you got started, how you, what made you want to pursue a career in design?
Growing up, I always was into, like, you know, fun little crafts and drawing, just like most kids. I don't think I really took, like, a real art class until my last year of high school. Mm-hmm. And I like really enjoyed it. I loved it. And this was kind of around the time when, I guess the internet had been around for a minute, but this is around the time where like all the graphic design blogs were popping up and Threadless, the t-shirt company was popular. And so I was just like super into that. And I was like looking at all these cool posters, and I think it was just, I was a spectator. But when it came time to choose when I what I wanted to do in college, I was like, oh, I could do art. Like, why not? Yeah. I feel like that, you know, I'm seeing these people make t-shirts and posters. That's got to be a viable career. And so it was down to that or music business. And when I was like checking out schools, I basically found out that music business is essentially a double major. Okay. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to work that hard in college. So I just chose.
Sorry, what is what is a double major?
Like doing, like if I were to do chemistry and biology, like two separate tracks. So it's like double the classes and you walk away with 2 degrees.
Oh, wow. Okay. Intense.
So I was like, I'm not, yeah, that's more than I'd like to do. So I went with the graphic design route, and that was around the time where Instagram had just started. And of course, hand lettering was organically popular at that point. And so I kind of hopped on board with everybody else, just, you know, scribbling stupid stuff and making things I thought were really cool at the time or now are terrible. And I kind of just haven't stopped since. So that's kind of how it started.
Yeah, really cool. I just watched an interview where you said your time at school has taught you how to figure out stuff for yourself, which I can very much relate to. Because like Dave and I both have studied at a design school in Germany. I don't know about you, Dave, but I didn't find the time super inspiring or helpful.
No, not like, at all.
Honestly, I just like to hate on that school a lot. And everybody I know who studied there also does the same thing. But yeah, I think like you really learn how to, figure out stuff for yourself, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you guys maybe did a step better than me. I went to like a small liberal arts school and the design program was definitely an afterthought. Like, they were teaching us on, you know, Adobe programs that the industry has like already abandoned.
Oh, no.
And the teachers just weren't invested in a lot of the work, and it was just so dated. And I think every college experience is, you need to kind of figure out how to do it for yourself in the way that works best for yourself. But I really just came out of school like, oh, I just paid so much money for basically nothing but a bunch of new friends. So, I mean, I do feel like it was important because one of my best skills is learning how to do stuff for myself and figuring shit out on my own. And I think a lot of people who, you know, go to these amazing schools just aren't necessarily pushed into that skill set as much. So definitely best skill I have in my toolbox.
Are you still in touch with some of the people you went to school with? Or did some of them turn into, I don't know, clients later on, or maybe people who hired you for design work?
A lot of my friends were through like marching band, because I was in marching band in college. And so I still hang out with a lot of my good friends that I do still connect with are from that side of things. But yeah, our design program was just so small, and it just not being great. I don't know that a lot of my peers in the design program are still doing design now. And if they are, it's like, they're probably like the sole graphic designer at a bank or something boring. Hopefully none of them are listening to this. I'm feeling bad about it, but
no offense to any of the art directors at banks out there. you're honestly one of the best lettering artists I know, and I don't even know you. I only know of you. We're only just now meeting, but I followed you for years, and your lettering is just so on point. And it's so fun to kind of like watch you try out new things and get better and kind of like, I don't know, adapt your style to just like whatever you're feeling or going through, you're expressing it in your lettering. And I find that so fascinating. And so when people find you on Instagram, they'll read your tagline, and it reads like, it likes to draw letters good, loves to draw letters bad. And I just, I find that so good. That's so funny. And just what is it about drawing badly for you that's more fun?
I don't, it's just more freeing. You know, obviously you should know the foundations and you should know what makes, you know, a letter good, and you should know all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And, I'm still learning all of those things, but I do feel pretty comfortable, making stuff look right. And I think that there's a million people out there who can make stuff look right, but I think what makes my style special or unique, or at least slightly more unique, is that I get to kind of push those forms in ways that you don't typically see, and it still somehow works. Sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it just looks bad and illegible or whatever, but, I think just like pushing and trying in that direction is, it's been fun because I'm like finding all these new ways to make something still look good, even if it's like technically wrong or bad.
Yes. Yeah. And you work a lot with texture too, right? You just kind of like, there's this, in the nicest way possible, this like layer of messiness, you know, you just embrace these imperfections in your lettering. And that's so, because I'm such a perfectionist and I can't help it, but I just love letting, I just admire people who are able to just let loose and let go of all the, you know, whatever people expect to see in typography.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a perfectionist too, and I feel like that, like leaning into some of this bad, gross texture and like forms is really just like a practice in letting go.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's so hard to, like, even when I'm working on a piece and I know I want it to look messy, I can just get like trapped into trying to make it look perfect. And I think it's just like, okay, put your pencil down, chill for a second, walk away from it. There's still something really special happening here without it being, you know, perfect and refined. And I think it's really just like, I'm enjoying the journey right now. And maybe I won't always, you know, love like the gross textures and stuff, but right now it feels like a lot of fun. And like, I make a lot of my work digitally, and I just, I know it's not cheating, but it always kind of feels like cheating. So I'm always like, how can I make this feel like it lives in this world with us and is a physical thing that you can like touch and interact with? And so that is kind of where the messy texture, I guess that's my ethos behind it. I just like want it to be in this world with us and not just some ones and zeros up in the sky.
Yeah, totally. And also just seeing people's reactions to your work and them just being like, wait, this is done digitally? This was done on an iPad? Because you wouldn't know. Maybe some of the pros out there would know, but I... Do you work in Procreate, right? Or Photoshop?
Yeah, yep.
May I ask Procreate. What type of brushes you use?
So I mostly use like the same three brushes, which is the Streaks brush in the calligraphy panel, the 6B pencil in the sketching panel, the and best. Then the marker in the inking panel, which I'm just like, I don't need to like buy 1,000 brushes and make all these special tweaks and things. Like there's, you know, pretty solid tools already built in. Of course I am like buying other things just to like mess around and do stuff, but for the most part those are like my workhorse brushes.
Nice. Thanks for sharing. I was just curious.
Yeah, I mean I feel like I there was a time in my career earlier where I would like keep all of these little things secret, and I'm like, that's stupid. You know, somebody can copy me exactly and do exactly what I do, and it's still not going to look like how I do it.
Never.
Just because we're all, you know, individual humans with different experiences and all that stuff. So why not share that wealth?
I know, exactly. Because people, I feel like one of the first questions you always get is just, what type of brush do you use? What pencil do you use? Whether it's digital or analog? Because I'm like, you know, even if I give them the exact model of pencil I use, there's no way they could, because we don't have the same brain and the same experiences.
Nope. Yeah. Yeah.
But you do also paint on canvas, I see. Is this like a new thing for you?
It is pretty new. I think the last couple of years I've been like, oh, I want to do more murals. And a couple of years ago, I just wasn't getting that work. I just you know, I wasn't doing that work, so people weren't seeing it. And then I've gotten a couple mural gigs, and I'm like, oh, I kind of enjoy this, despite my body feeling really awful and miserable when I'm done with it.
Yeah.
So maybe I can, like, take out the terrible pain in my body and just do it on canvas and not on a two-story brick wall. So it's been fun because I find myself doing a lot of the same things on canvas that I've been doing on the iPad. Mm-hmm. Just like the process feels very similar, and I didn't think that like I could get away with that on canvas, but it works, and I think it's like creating a lot of like, it's like such a frustrating process, but I'm doing that on purpose because mm-hmm. like I'm trying to mess it up and then find my way back to like this slightly cleaner piece or covering up like 90% of the marks I'm making mm-hmm. just so that they're like little treats that you can find mm-hmm. in the texture work. I don't know. I kind of went on a tangent, but I am really enjoying like working on canvas and just making things that are ugly and actually exist in the physical world.
Well, I think they're beautiful, honestly. The other day you shared a story of your process of how you get that weathered look to your paintings, that kind of mm-hmm. like artificial aging, like the smudging and the, you know, messing around with texture. And it's like, because that's not something I've ever done before. Can you elaborate on how you go about like adding that texture once you're done with the painting?
Yeah, I'm kind of like doing it throughout the process, depending on, I guess, whether I'm working on wood or canvas, mm-hmm. which I'm kind of like alternating between the two these days. Obviously on wood, I can beat it up quite a bit more than I can on canvas. So like throughout the process, I'll take like a steel brush and, mm-hmm. you know, beat the wood up, or I'll sand in between paint layers mm-hmm. or nice. Just try to find like stupid things. Like I think in one of my stories, I showed that I take a tape, like a big tape dispenser with the, you know, the metal mm-hmm. Ridge to like tear the tape. I like will tear that up off of the tape dispenser and just like scrape the wood with just like stupid things. I'm always like looking around the house like, what, how can I destroy this piece of art right now to add that texture? And then sometimes like it's coming back and painting over that, or I don't know. I think the past few weeks I've just been trying to put obstacles in my process mm-hmm. to either just add extra texture or to paint back over to provide that essence of a texture, I guess. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's like not a set, you know, okay, at this point I'm going to do this thing. It's just, okay, what does this painting need right now? How does it feel? How can I add that feeling? Do I need to do it a lot or a little? Mm-hmm. Like, I think every painting, the process has been different. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah. And besides sandpaper, what other mediums do you use when you, well, before you get to messing up your paintings, how do you mm-hmm. paint them? Do you use acrylics, spray paint, markers?
Yeah. So I primarily am using acrylic paint, mm-hmm. but, on some of these paintings where I don't have like a sketch already kind of formulated, I've been starting with spray paint just to like block in like the letters or the shapes to get the forms. And then I come back and like paint the background in with acrylic, and then mm-hmm. I'll maybe spray some more or use, you know, Posca markers or other paint markers, colored pencils I've used a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's mixed media, but acrylic is kind of the primary source. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, I want to talk a bit about the messages you're writing. Sometimes they're just funny or deep, and you also use your skill for political messages. Like you write about human rights issues, about racism and feminism. Why is that important to you? And do you feel like that has some kind of effect on clients or on your followers? Or
I think when I like first started getting into lettering, I was doing, you know, I was very into religion and my faith, and that has kind of waned quite a bit in the last several years. And so a lot of I like gain this huge following doing, you know, Bible verses and like inspirational quotes. And it honestly, it felt kind of fake is maybe too strong of a word, but it just felt kind of flat, and it didn't feel like it was reflecting me, the person. And I think when I started to feel like everything was clicking in my work, it was because I was just expressing who I am. And, like you said, it's some of it is just like stupid lines and funny quotes, and some of it is, you know, I'm feeling hurt in a relationship, so I'm going to express that in a specific way. And sometimes it is like, hey, I'm Black. This world is kind of shitty for Black people right now, and that's what I want to talk about. And so it's not like I don't get up and like, okay, I'm going to do this deep political message. It's really just like, today this thing is important to me, and I'm going to share it. And I don't know. I feel like there are people who feel like we have to use our platform for hard messages and things like that. And I think we do to some degree have a responsibility to do that. But I just think it's more honest to kind of share the range of, you know, someone's personality or character. Rather than being like, I'm only going to talk about this thing, or I'm only going to talk about that. So, yeah, I don't know. We have a lot of stupid shit going on in our world, and I think it is good to be talking about that stuff. But sometimes it's like too much, and it's hard to talk about that stuff. Like right now, we have, you know, probably 3 or 4 big wars that we know about that are just kind of happening, and all these other conflicts around the world, and climate change is going nuts per usual, and nobody's doing anything about it. And it just feels like so much. And so right now I'm using like stupid lines to kind of cheer myself up. But yeah, when it's important to me, you'll hear about it. And I don't ever want it to come off like I'm forcing, you know, an issue or anything. It's just like, this is how I feel today. You guys should know about that. Because that's who I am. I'm not just like this robot thing on the internet that is dishing out lines.
Yeah. Do you feel like people connect to that? Can they relate and message you sometimes when they feel a similar way? Or
I feel like I get a little bit of everybody. There are some people who are like one issue types of people and only following me because I talked about the Black Lives Matter movement at one point, and I don't think they connect with some of the stupider things I do. And there are some people who are just like, I like you the person. And there are some people who are like, I like the funny things you do. So I think there's a range of people, and I think that's more so why I feel comfortable just expressing it all, because I know I'm not gonna ever be able to, you know, please one entire group of people, or I don't know, that starts to get exhausting. So people are identifying with what I'm doing, but I don't know if it's like more or less than before, when I was doing only inspirational quotes. I don't know. It's always hard to know how people actually feel about your stuff on social media, because it's so, you know, algorithms and all those things. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, I do relate a lot when people share personal things. Also, like, obviously there's important issues I'm glad when they're being addressed, or I also address them. But also like the personal, when people let their personality out a little bit, especially if it's like a really cool artist like yourself, it's like, it's, yeah, humans are complex. Humans are interesting and funny. And I just love seeing that on Instagram, especially a platform where there's a lack of realness. So it's always refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, I love seeing it too, and that's why I'm like, if I love to see it, somebody else probably wants to see that for me. So it just feels like a fair trade.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if they don't, and if they unfollow, then good riddance.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. I don't need to know many thousands of people. You know, like, it's cool if, you know, my 10 friends follow and like my stuff. That's good enough for me.
Yeah. That's the attitude.
Sure. I mean, I can't lie and say, like, the, you know, the little likes and notifications are, the little dopamine hits are fun. But, you know, when it comes down to, like, what do I actually walk away with in life, you know, from this thing? It's, you know, good connections and good conversations with folks. So,
yeah.
Yeah, totally. Because those likes are just like harder and harder to come by these days. So if you kind of like, if you form your well-being and your happiness around those, I don't know. Just like
that's a shaky journey.
Yeah. We already touched on your recent series of personal work, your hand painted work, and if you don't mind, I'd just like to go back a little and because I love watching those time-lapse videos of yours on social media. Like the other day, I think just yesterday or so, I watched you finish an entire painting, and you shared the whole process from like a blank canvas to the final over the course of, I don't know, 2 or 3 days or something. And it was just so interesting to see how you approach these things. Because like during the sketch process, you would just be standing there with your hand in your pocket, just like casually, you know, doodling away. And at the end, you just have this obviously you have this beautiful painting, but like I want to know what's your motivation to create this recent series of personal paintings, and also how has it informed the way you approach your lettering now?
I think my goal is to be able to do like a solo show or something, or exhibition, or maybe a group something. So that's kind of why I'm like pumping out stuff. Mm-hmm. But I mean, at the end of the day, like if I get that or don't, I am like actually having fun. I know like people say that about their work a lot, and sometimes they mean it and sometimes they don't. But like, I am like truly having a good time making these paintings. And like, you know, I mentioned that it is frustrating, but like I'm like creating the frustration myself and then, you know, working my way back to a solution. And I think just like this critical thinking's too deep, but it's just like I'm having to find these solutions and get creative. And I think that's kind of like the big driver in making this work at the moment. Mm-hmm. And kind of just seeing if I can like develop a point of view in what I'm saying with the painting. So there's not like a specific format, but I think that there is starting to be like a kind of a driving idea behind some of the lines and like what they mean for me. But the process has been interesting just in that, like, every time I start a painting, I don't really know like how I'm going to get to the end point. And I really don't know like what the end point really is. Like some of the paintings, like I have, you know, I've created the sketch and it's like a final piece of digital work. And I'm like, I'm just going to replicate that on canvas. And there's that. But then there's some of these where I'm going into it like, I don't know how this is going to end. Like the painting that you're talking about that you saw in my stories, like I'm still working on that. And I just added a bunch of things to it that looked terrible. and I'm like staring at this ugly painting and I'm like, okay, we gotta bring it back a little bit closer to something I enjoy. But just like that, finding my way through that part of the process has been a lot of fun. And I think sharing the time lapses too, like, I just want to show people, like, it's not as hard as you think it is a lot of times. Like, I'm just taking these blobs and kind of just kind of like I'm sculpting something, like that's, you know, kind of too deep and shit, but like I'm taking these ugly blobs and trying to form something a little bit nicer, and it's not like anything. I'm not, I don't know, I'm just like not doing all of this like deep heavy thinking about, oh, this I want to get this, you know, this letter form to do this and say this. I'm just like putting shapes together, mm-hmm. and those shapes, you know, are turning into something cool. And I think that a lot of people just think it's, you know, I don't know, some Rembrandt-y deep heady shit where I'm trying to think of like this lovely masterpiece, and it's like, no, I'm just taking, you know, a couple squares and rectangles, a couple circles, and putting them together. So I think the process overall is just giving me more license to just make shittier things and make it in stupid ways, because I like, it just doesn't have to be that hard. Like even in my sketching process now, like I'm just, you know, putting a bunch of lines together until it makes a rectangle, and then I put a bunch of rectangles together until it makes a this or that. I don't know. I just, it's not as hard as it seems. Like I know it's not easy, and I know like I've done a lot of work to make it look kind of easy, but I just want to share with people the process, because it doesn't have to be crazy or intimidating. Like it can just be messy and stupid looking until it doesn't look stupid or continues to look stupid, you know, whatever. So
yeah,
I don't know, I just kind of talked out of my ass for five minutes, but it's been fun.
That was great, thanks so much for sharing, because I feel like that's the right approach, because it's your personal work. You don't want to overthink it. It's just about the process, maybe learning a few things, maybe messing up, and maybe in the end you'll end up liking it, or maybe you won't, but you know, it doesn't matter. Because I feel like this, honestly, just having this conversation is super encouraging to me, because I haven't felt that way in such a long time. I just feel just like extremely overworked, and I have no desire to create anything personal. I barely even have the time, and if I did, I'd want to do anything but draw or paint, which I know it would make me feel better, especially painting when you're not staring at a screen. It does make you feel better. I'm just not at that point, but just hearing you talk about your process really is inspiring me to hopefully, you know, once I get out of this hole to, I don't know, because there is a therapeutic element to just painting and just being by yourself, being in the zone and just seeing what comes out.
I mean, and people should know, like, I am in this, you know, moment in my career or life at, you know, at this time where it is fun and great, but it has not always been, you know, I've been in that hole for many, many seasons, you know, prior to this. And so that's why I think this feels so special, because like I really had to be in the mood to paint before. And now it's just like, I wake up, I'm trying to move my schedule around so that I can paint and just like get this stuff out. And it doesn't always feel like that, but that's why I'm just like, let me take advantage of this while I have it. And maybe it becomes more of a habit, but right now it's great. So I just have to soak it up. But yeah, I've been in the dark ages and the dark periods, and it's tough to like wake up and feel like you want to do that stuff. So
yeah. Well, but maybe that's really what it is. You got to make it a priority. And I hardly ever do. You just have to, maybe if you're saying, you know, I'm going to start my day working on something that I actually care about before I tend to my client work, if the old deadline allows for it. Because I'm just currently, I remember whenever we talked to Mary-Kate McDevitt and everyone had experienced creative block. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. You remember? Well, I'm in it right now. I'm experiencing it, and it's not great. But I still have to function, right? I'm still like, I can still deliver work. I'm just not enjoying the process at all. That'll change eventually. And just talking to you really seems to make things easier. Honestly,
I mean, I think too, just like go easy on yourself, obviously. You know, creative block is gonna come. You didn't experience it until you did, and now it's here. And I don't know, just for me, I think just like taking things down to scraps and just removing the gloss of the process and just making something dirty has been kind of the thing that's brought me back to why it's fun. Because like I'm like looking at your studio and it's gorgeous, and I see work that I have always admired, and you're making beautiful work. But I would just encourage you and everybody else, like, make something shitty and ugly and messy. Do it like you did it when you were a kid and when it was fun, and you know, before you had all the knowledge.
Yes, that's great advice.
Yeah, and I feel like when you work digitally, you also mess up a lot. You change colors, you move around things, and you're basically translating that process on canvas. Like, you're not having a perfectly sketch next to you, which you're like just copying, but you're actually working with the material. And I think that's what it's made for, is like the canvas is made to like fight a little bit with it and have like things go wrong and then save them again.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned earlier that like using digital things feels like cheating. And so when I am working on the iPad, I do still try to make the process as close to as if I'm working on paper or something. And so like, I don't use like the color drop tool often. Like, I will sit there and color something in and, you know, make sure it still feels not difficult, but like I'm actually putting in, you know, the work and like doing the process. 'Cause that, I think, is the part that just like, I don't know, it just makes your brain, I don't even know what I'm saying, but it just like lets you have fun and like just be in it rather than like trying to, you know, constantly get to the final product, which, I mean, that's what we do. That's like why people pay us money to do what we do, is to like get to this finished thing. But why can't we enjoy and like grow through the process of doing too?
Yeah, you could either fill out the space you want to color by hand, or you could just like use the color drop tool and then add a texture on top that makes it look like you did that. So might as well do it yourself.
And I think you just like doing it that way in a slow, like laborious way, you just like find things that you wouldn't have found otherwise. Like, you know, I'll fill things in a really like quick and sloppy way. And I think that like, you probably couldn't really reproduce that texture with like a, you know, just an added layer of something. Like, that only comes from, you know, doing it this, you know, slow, you know, caveman way. So I don't know. I think it's just being open to the messes when they come, and just moving a little slower. I just find more cute little secrets in the artwork.
Yeah, that's a nice way to look at it. And it's very good for your brain to color out things, color in things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a nice little meditative practice. I know that there's this artist, Vincent DeBoer or something. I'm sure I'm butchering his last name, but he, you know, uses the kind of this dry brush process, and he just like is slowly filling in these, you know, massive pieces. Sometimes it's like rolled paper, and he just like, he has it set up where, you know, it's showing this much, and he just keeps rolling through this, you know, roll of paper, and he's just doing this thing. And it's like, that's what I want. I want to do something that like is that slow and meditative and just like, it's hard to describe. I wish I could like in this podcast show the people, but it's just such a meditation. And I think that that's like, why can't this be that? Why can't it be a meditation too, in addition to like, you know, making money for people?
Yes, absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about collaboration, because I saw that you sometimes work with your brother, Cedric, who's a graphic design graduate. Is that... And I relate again, because my older brother is like a very big inspiration to me creatively. He's also an illustrator and animator, and draws just much better than I do. And I basically, as a child, I copied everything he did. And I didn't have a personality until I was 21. So I've never collaborated with my brother, though. I get along with him very well, but I would be curious what that is like, because you have collaborated with other artists as well, as for example Monique Amy, who we also interviewed. But what is like the collaboration with your family like?
So I don't know that we've ever like both been on the same project before. It more so is like if I have a client who comes to me and I don't have time, or it just doesn't align with, you know, what I'm wanting to do at the moment, we have like a shared inbox that he can kind of jump in and you know, pick up that client, or I can, you know, tell people, hey, I can't do this right now, but my brother's available. So that, I think that works for us just because my brother has like a full time, he has a day job as well as a graphic designer, and we just kind of work in different ways and in different spaces. And he's not a lettering artist. He's probably a much better illustrator than I am. He's probably a better designer than I am, and I just haven't like seen what he's doing at his day job. But I don't know, it's just nice to like, I don't even know that I'm mentoring him in any way, but it's nice to just know that he's doing his thing, I'm doing my thing, and we can both be inspired by each other and both like encourage each other in the process without kind of I don't know, stepping on toes. And like, I know a few years ago when I was at a prior job, my boss was like, hey, do you think your brother would want to work here? And I'm like, oh, I love my brother, he's cool, but I just think I would be too bossy and like be his second mother if we were working side by side. Like, hey, are you sure you want to do it like that? Are you sure you don't want to do it my way? So I think just us kind of being in our separate worlds, but kind of walking down a similar path is the sweet spot, I think, for both of us.
Yeah. Do you also share your process with each other? Like, do you get feedback from each other, or does everybody just do their thing?
I think we mostly kind of just do our thing. I know, like, we, you know, we talk to each other pretty frequently, and, you know, we follow each other on social media, but I don't know that... We have like a, we're not like texting each other our client projects like, what do you think of this? I think I'd be open to that. I just don't know that we have ever really done that. I feel like maybe we should probably do that. It'd be nice to have like fresh eyes on my work that, I don't know, just is not a slightly unbiased third party, I guess, seeing my work. So
yeah,
we haven't done that though in the past, really.
But you said sometimes you pass down other work yet you don't have time for, but then Cedric's style is so different than yours, isn't it? Like, are the clients okay with like going a different direction? Because they obviously want your style when they ask for you, right?
I think the projects that I'm more comfortable passing off are, they tend to be just people looking for a designer rather than like looking for Simon and Moose or Simone Wilder specifically.
Okay.
And so it's like brand design projects or things like that that I'll pass to him, which I know he has that like in his arsenal and in his toolkit. But if someone is just like looking for me specifically, I'll be like, hey, I can't do it. This person's style is not quite like that, but I think they'd be a valuable person to work with. No sweat. If not, you know, cool if you can, but yeah.
Okay.
Nice. Simone, you're represented by a collaborative artist management agency called Coloop. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right.
I want to know, how do you typically find your clients? Is that through your agent at Coloop, or do you still have to do a lot of outreach yourself?
So I know that, so Ryan is my agent who I work with at Coloop, and I know that he is probably behind the scenes, like doing a level of outreach that I don't necessarily hear about. I know that he's very good about pitching us, our roster of artists, collaboratively. So like if there's a project where a client's looking for several artists, he's always pitching us and, mm-hmm. you know, pushing that work. But I think for the most part, a lot of the work that I do comes from my own networks or connections.
Okay.
And I'm not really doing any specific outreach. Usually I'm not very good at marketing myself, outside of just like posting what I'm doing on social media. Mm-hmm. But what I do like to do is just make good connections with people and, okay. Maintain good relationships, not even like in a professional networking sense, just like, I just want to be friends with you. And I think just holding those good relationships usually leads to, you know, other networks and just good projects. So that is mostly how I'm getting projects. People are just finding my work on Instagram, or they hear a friend is working on a project and they share my name, type of thing. So, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess just being kind usually goes a long way.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget, like, just be a good, just don't be shitty, and yeah. things tend
it's
to work out.
It's not even that hard, is it?
the world is making it seem like it's very hard, but it's simple. Just be cool and connect with people. But I think, like, I do make more of an effort to, like, go out and meet new people for that mm-hmm. reason, because I am pretty shy on my own, and mm-hmm. like if I could do this job without ever leaving my house and never talking to anybody, I'd probably do it. But I know that like I just need to meet people, and those people will help me meet other people who will hire me for things mm-hmm. or connect me with the right people. So that's kind of my biggest marketing tool.
Hmm. What does that typically look like? Do you go to conferences? Do you just hit people up and ask them to meet up for coffee?
Yeah, for local folks, I am trying to like connect in person mm-hmm. as much as possible, you know, just get drinks, get coffee. I do go to conferences somewhat frequently, but that's not necessary. I actually was talking to the Hood Sisters. They had come mm-hmm. to town one time and we went and got drinks. And I was like, yeah, I've never been to conferences because, you know, at the time I couldn't afford conferences. So I was like, I can't afford to go to all these conferences. And they're like, well, the secret is you just speak at the conferences and then you get to go for free.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, that's how it's done. That's really cool. It must be easy as the Hood Sisters. Everybody knows you guys. And like, you guys get invited to speak. But like, I didn't have a lot of connections, but after that conversation, I started getting hit up for, conferences and things, because I think they were just like, hey, we have this designer who yes. would love to, you know, speak. And so that's how like that connection, that me just like hanging out with these people got yeah. me into the conference circuit. And now I do it somewhat regularly. And of course, you know, now that growth is exponential, because you go to a conference, you meet 50 people mm-hmm. and, you know, so now you're connected to 50 new people. And yeah, it's just like, meet good people, go to things, mm-hmm. show up, make good connections.
And it's easy too, once you're in the same place, it's casual because everyone's into the same thing. We all like designing. So it's yeah. like, it's really easy to connect on that level when you know yeah. that everyone's on the same page. Did mm-hmm. you, I feel like I saw you gave a talk or a workshop at, was it Creative Works or?
So I gave a talk at Creative Works, mm-hmm. but it was, I think, a pandemic year, so it was a virtual thing.
Ah, okay.
I did a workshop recently at Into the Woods, which...
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Lincoln Design Company yes. put that on, mm-hmm. And that was great. Got to be out, you know, in the mountains, in the woods, and, you know, talking about my process or lack thereof, and... Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was fun. It was my first time doing a workshop, and now I am doing a workshop at Creative Works coming up in the spring. So that'll be another, you know, great fun place to meet, you know, people that inspire me and just meet a lot of new people. So
that's exciting.
Yeah, very nerve-wracking. I'll probably sweat through many layers of shirts, but it'll still be fun.
Yeah, but does a I feel like if you prepare a talk or a workshop, it usually makes you think about your process a lot. Did you have to like pin down your process for that workshop, or just going like experimental, or what are you planning for that?
Yeah, so the last time I gave the workshop, I had to like try and really think about it, and I like my process is just so all over the place that it was kind of difficult to pin down, you know, the sweet spots, because I don't want to like go to a workshop and be like, okay, this is, you know, these are the keys I hit on the computer specifically, and this is exactly how I do it. But I do want to just like just encourage people, just kind of like what we've been talking about, like make something stupid, messy, break the process down to like the sticks and just do it like that. Like, I think that's going to kind of be my sweet spot going forward and leading workshops. Just like, let's have some fun. Let's like break this process down to something simple and easy. And like, whatever you make may not be what I make, but you'll probably find something cool that, you know, you have made and that you enjoy making. So yeah, I think that's gonna kind of be the direction I take things in.
So cool. I wish I could attend. It's probably a bit far away for me.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole ocean separating us. But I thought that Into the Woods conference in the Pacific Northwest or somewhere, mm-hmm, in Washington, mm-hmm, State or something. It just sounded so fun. That just sounded like the type of design conference I would have liked to go to. But just traveling all the way from Germany, it's impossible.
Yeah, I think we need some more conferences that are just like in not conference centers and like stuffy rooms. Like, let's get out and, you know, do some things in the world we live in. So, yeah,
totally.
More of that.
So was it actually in the woods? I'm not familiar with that.
I mean, it was at a lodge hotel that's basically in the woods, like beautiful, beautiful views. And, you know, a lot of it was like we were sitting in a room and hearing people talk. But like, I went to a workshop that was about forest bathing. Like, we went and walked around the forest and, you know, sketched and drew things. And I don't know, that was just a nice little break away from sitting in an air-conditioned room.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe your next workshop can be like actually in the woods and we are just carving stuff into trees or something.
That would be sick, honestly.
You can have that idea if you want.
Simone, before we let you go, we have one listener question for you. And it's from your agent Ryan at Coloop, I believe.
Classic.
All right.
My art dad.
Yes. So your art dad asked, is soup a whole meal by itself?
Oh my god.
That's a tough one.
He's trying to start some fights online. We have kind of a running bit about that question, mm-hmm, within our group. That's kind of how we start all of our like group meetings and meetups is with that question. And
valid question, though. Is it it's usually a side or an appetizer, but it could very well be a full meal.
Yeah,
what's your thought?
So my stance on the subject is I don't think that soup should be a meal. The exceptions to that are ramen or pho. Those are full meals. Like, you walk away from those like, oh, I just had so much food.
Yes.
Like, if you invite me over to your house for dinner and we're just having a soup or something, I'm not coming back ever again.
Just that's a tiny just, bowl of miso.
To me, that's just, that's a crime.
What about tomato soup, but with a side of grilled cheese sandwiches? Well, then it's not a whole meal by itself.
Grilled cheese with the side of soup. Yeah.
Okay. What about split pea soup? That's also a side, right? Typically.
Mm-hmm.
Wonton soup.
If I come over and the only thing you serve me is split pea soup, I'm not coming back.
Yeah. I am going home.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
We were actually I was on tour with my band once, and usually when you're on tour, you get a dinner. and you're usually very hungry. And they actually served us tomato soup. And I was so mad. I was like, nice starter. Okay, what else? And then the person brought some more bread. And then that was it. I was so upset.
The letdown.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this strong stance of mine has just come from like going over to a friend's house for dinner and then the family only eats soup. And I'm like, if this is how you live, that's great. I love that for you. But this is just not, this is not a sustainable way to live for me. So
absolutely not.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we discussed that. Is there anything
very important?
Very important. Thanks, Ryan. Do we have any other questions? What's up with corporate Memphis? That whole style? Because you're from Tennessee, right? Mm-hmm. That illustration style, corporate Memphis. Have you heard of that? Is that a topic of interest in Tennessee?
I don't know that it's really come up many times. I don't know. I don't even know where the name came from. I don't even know if it originated in our Memphis or if it's like a...
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Maybe some sort of design movement or something.
Yeah, a design movement that... us Tennesseans have not really picked up quite yet, or maybe okay. we started it and we're over it and
right
we have moved on already.
It seems like
I think we're all over it.
Memphis is a design style from Milan.
Oh, okay.
And corporate Memphis is like is I think referencing that arts, like that art style from the 80s.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't around in the 80s, so I can't speak for the origination of it, but love that we went through that. We're still innovating in our design world.
Yep.
All right. Any other questions?
I think that's it. That's all I have for now.
All right, Simone, it was lovely to chat to you. It was really inspiring. Yes. And I would like, could you give our listeners also a way to look at your stuff? Like, where can they find you online?
You can find me on at least one or two social media platforms, at Simon and Moose. I don't know if I'm around too many spots these days, but that's kind of the easiest way to keep up with what I'm making on a day-to-day. I'm pretty bad at posting regularly, but I do put up a lot of stories kind of behind the scenes and other stupid shit. So come be my buddy.
Will do.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Okay. Thanks, Simone. It was a real pleasure getting to chat with you and getting to finally meet too. I hope all our listeners enjoyed it as much as we have. If you did, please go ahead and review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you have any additional thoughts or feedback for us, you can just send us a DM on Instagram. We're at PayToDrawPodcast. That's pretty much it. I think we'll be back in 2 weeks with, well, we don't quite know at this point. We're slightly overworked. So we'll be back with either crochet artist Aaliyah Salmon from New York City or design legend Aaron Draplin from Portland, Oregon. But it's nothing set in stone yet, so no promises. This is probably the worst cliffhanger ever.
I just want to say that Aaliyah is not a crochet artist, but a tufting artist, or like a punch needle. I think it's like the same principle, but punch needle is by hand.
Oh,
and tufting is with a gun, I think.
Huh.
But it's definitely not crochet.
Okay. Well, thanks for clearing that up. Not crochet artist, Aaliyah Salmon. I don't know. We'll see. Or maybe we'll have no guests at all. Maybe it'll just be an hour of me talking about what it's like to be depressed while also being on multiple deadlines. spoiler alert, not fun.
Or you can have me back and we can fight about the soup question for
we can go through every soup and see is this a meal, yes or no.
We haven't talked about borscht yet, you know, the red, what do you call the vegetable?
Beetroot soup?
Beetroot.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could be a, no, that's usually an appetizer too, right?
What's the like liquid to stuff ratio? That's kind of the,
it's usually pretty, crux. Well, the ones I've had, they're usually pretty watered down, really liquidy. Mm. And then there's chunks of, well, beetroot and maybe, I don't know. Vicky, do you know more? Help me out here.
I don't know. I don't think I ever had it.
Okay. Well, I don't think we'll ever find out then.
I'll have to go get a side of borscht and I'll report back.
All right. Okay. See you in 2 weeks then when we talk about borscht.
All right, cool. All right. Well, goodbye.
Yeah. I guess. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye, Simone. Bye, everyone. Bye, Vicky, also.
Bye, Dave.